Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, March 3rd. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we'll cover everything you need to know to make a delicious St. Patrick's Day meal. We brought in Chef Rob Handel and Carol Clement of Heatheridge Farm in Preston Hollow, New York, to take us through some Irish traditions. If you have a question or a comment or want to share a recipe, the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Bangers, rashers, white pudding. You think I can get a bowl of Lucky Charms? I don't know. We'll find out right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it seems like a ways off, but St. Patrick's Day is 2 weeks from today. In the U.S., many see it as a time to celebrate Irish culture. So here to help you whip up some traditional Irish dishes are Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heatheridge Farm in Preston Hollow. Also, the ruler of the kitchen over there at the cafe. And joining him is Carol Clement, who owns and operates Heatheridge Farm. So, Rob and Carol, nice to have you both here today.
Thanks for having us.
Your coffee is here, so now I expect a good performance out of both of you. Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Before we delve into all things Irish, how are things at the farm?
It's good. We're already starting to ramp up for spring, getting ready for lambing and kidding and all that kind of exciting stuff.
Oh, cool. How long have you been doing this farming thing?
Full-time farming for 13 years, and before that it was homesteading.
Oh, nice. Nice. And so you're enjoying Heatheridge Farm?
I love it.
Yeah. And how about the Bee's Knees Cafe, Chef Rob Handel?
Yeah, well, we're getting ready for the month of March. We do a lot of Irish things all throughout the month to kind of celebrate. You know, Carol and I and Carol's husband, John, we all have connections to Irish culture and Irish food. So we do Irish breakfast throughout the whole month of March, and then we scatter in some other things. And next weekend we have we do an Irish music session on the second Sunday of every month.
Oh, yeah?
So next Sunday is our March edition, so we're going to have plenty of traditional Irish foods to go along with that music session.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, what connection do you have to the Irish country or culture?
Well, ethnically, I'm German and Italian.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
but I grew up in East Durham, and East Durham, New York, is known as the Emerald Isle of the Catskills.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it was one of the, you know, throughout the Catskills, historically, there were different enclaves where immigrants would come and vacation in the same town where they could embrace their culture. And East Durham had a lot of Irish immigrants and then Irish American families who would come and spend summers there. And my family has a resort in East Durham. So even though I'm German and Italian, I grew up learning how to play traditional Irish music and doing Irish social dancing and all of this kind of thing. So
trying to fit in.
Yeah.
And so they tolerated the German-Italian okay?
Yeah. Well, you know, in high school, most people assumed that I was Irish because I did all these Irish things.
All right. And Carol, what's your connection?
Well, my family, both my parents are half Irish and half Italian. It was those waves of immigrants that came into Brooklyn and lived next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to marry John Harrison, who is Irish and an Irish citizen. And through marriage, I'm now an Irish citizen as well.
Oh, terrific. And do you go often?
We went a lot before we started farming full time.
Yeah, no, there's not much time left, is there?
not anymore.
What time do you get up in the morning?
With dawn.
With dawn?
Mm-hmm.
And who's dawn? Hey, that's a little joke there. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. A couple of weeks early, we get ready for St. Patrick's Day cooking with Chef Rob Handel and Carol Clement of Heatheridge Farm. What'd you bring, Rob?
Well, we brought a traditional full Irish breakfast. So we make these on the farm using all of the meat that we raise right there. And a lot of these are products that are hard to find in America because Americans just aren't familiar with them. So we have some Irish brown bread. It's a whole wheat soda bread that's kind of the everyday bread common throughout Ireland. We have something called white pudding, which is a pork and oat-based sausage.
Where's the white pudding?
This is the white pudding.
The microphone arms here are not allowing me to see too well.
So the white pudding is a pork and oat sausage.
That just looks like sausage. Why would you call it pudding?
Well, because it's steamed or boiled. So instead of throwing the raw sausage in the pan, you steam it first, and then you cut it into slices, and you fry those slices.
Ah, okay.
We have some bangers, which are Irish breakfast sausages. The reason why they're called bangers, they were actually developed by British people during World War I, and they would cook them on the shovels that they were using to dig the ditches, and the grease would drip into the fire and, you know, kind of pop, and so they would call them bangers.
And they only go back to World War I?
They were making that style of sausage prior to that. We have some boxty, which is an Irish potato pancake.
Oh, that looks delicious.
And then under the boxty, it's hard for you to see, Ray, we have what's called a rasher, and that's an Irish-style bacon. The Irish make bacon out of pork belly like we do, but they call it streaky bacon.
Mm-hmm.
The standard bacon is made out of pork loin, so it's a larger piece of lean meat surrounded by a little bit of fat on the outside, and it's unsmoked. It's just cured.
And where did you learn to cook in these traditional ways?
Well, growing up in East Durham, something that people would comment on a lot the first time they came to town was all of the places would advertise Irish breakfast 10 p.m. to midnight. And, you know, back in the heyday of East Durham, it went even later than that. And typically in Ireland, it's eaten for breakfast. But in East Durham, after you're out, you know, all night at the bar, you might order a big Irish breakfast to settle your stomach before you go to bed.
That's nothing like a little grease to settle your stomach.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I grew up learning how to prepare the Irish breakfast, you know, at my family's place in East Durham.
This boxty recipe, though, comes from my husband's family.
The potato pancakes?
Yes. His mother, Tess, taught him to make this boxty, and then he taught me and Rob.
Yeah.
The boxty potato pancake is more from the Northern Ireland counties, and his family was from Leitrim. And it's in those areas that boxty was first developed. My understanding is that after the famine, when potatoes weren't that good and that plentiful, you couldn't boil whole potatoes. They were misshapen, they had bad spots, so you had to cut up your potatoes and do something with it. So this was a preparation to do with those misshapen potatoes, and when potatoes were scarce and you needed a special dish to use those potatoes.
Well, I love a good potato pancake. Tell us how this one is prepared.
Well, it's the potato is grated. It's mixed with a little bit of flour, a little...
Oh, yeah, the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't worry. We do that a lot. You get excited, and then you drift away. But there you are.
You might want to add some special flavoring, some grated onion or some scallions, but usually it's just done plain.
Mm.
Made into a potato pancake batter, and then lightly fried on both sides. One big pancake in the size of the frying pan. So how they made it in this family, it's made in different ways in different parts of the country in different families.
And then you just cut it up into slices like a pizza.
Yes.
Well, it looks delicious. It looks very thin. It almost looks like you could hold it like a pizza, like a piece of pizza.
Yeah, you certainly could. And there are some places in Ireland that serve them with something to dip them in, as, you know, you might pick them up and
like a bar food.
Exactly.
In fact, they call them dippities then.
Dippities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what would you dip in? I mean, when I have potato pancakes, I'll have applesauce or sour cream. But what would you do in Ireland?
You could do that. Some kind of jam, some kind of mousse, some kind of fish sauce.
Mm.
You know, when we serve them with the breakfast, people usually dip them in the egg yolk.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds good. You didn't bring eggs.
I brought an egg, but we didn't prepare it because we didn't have room on the plate.
What, we can only give you one paper plate here? You know, it's public radio. And
we thought the cold egg wouldn't be
that
as appealing.
You make a point. And then Brian Shields has to come in and do Northeast Report at 3:30, and he says the place smells like eggs. You know how that goes. Our number here on Food Friday is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We talk about Irish cooking today with Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees and Carol Clement of Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollow, New York. So your husband is from Ireland.
He was conceived in Ireland. His parents came over, and then he was born here and was a Bronx street kid in an Irish neighborhood.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
So, but it must be nice for you to go back.
Well, it's great. He and his family very much have a foot on both sides of the ocean. He has many aunts and uncles and cousins in Ireland as he does here.
Hmm. Well, I think we should probably try some food. Anybody else hungry?
Dig in.
No? I cannot possibly. I mean, I could eat all that, but it wouldn't be a pretty sight. Anybody else want to share with me?
We could help, but why don't you start?
Okay.
The bangers is a recipe that I developed. I looked up, going back and forth to Ireland, I fell in love with the bangers there. So I looked up a lot of recipes and I kept making it. My husband made a great taste tester till we got it so that it was how we liked it and the way we liked the bangers in Ireland itself.
It's just a sausage, right?
It's a kind of sausage.
All right, so I mean, how would this differ from your normal breakfast sausage that you would get over
Ireland
your stateside?
Ireland for a long time was a very poor country, so they actually put some filler in the sausage. So along with the meat, there is either some kind of breadcrumbs or flour or oatmeal, depending on what part of Ireland you're from. So the same thing with the pudding. It actually is looks like a sausage, but there's very little meat in it. So this was a way that they stretched out the use of the pork to feed more people.
This banger, and it's delicious, seems like there's a lot of meat in that. You're not using that much filler?
Well, that's what our Irish cousin said. You've got the flavor right, but you got too much meat in it.
Oh, really? But it's really delicious. And so this is just straight cuts of pork. And what filler are you using? What, breadcrumbs?
In the bangers, we use breadcrumbs. In the white pudding, and the reason it's called white pudding is there's also often a black pudding that goes along with it. And the black pudding is pork, blood, and oatmeal.
Ah.
And, you know, we have a hard time sourcing the blood to make the blood pudding, so we don't incorporate that into our Irish breakfast. So the white pudding has oats, but the bangers have breadcrumbs. And that's why the bangers, it's a much finer texture. You know, you don't taste the individual oats, whereas with the white pudding, you can taste the texture that the oats add
to
it.
I really love the texture of this white pudding.
Isn't it nice,
isn't it?
It really has a hearty feel to it.
One of the really great things about that is that you do slice it and then fry it on both sides, so you get that kind of a soft texture in the middle, but frying it on both sides really adds to the flavor and the texture, and you know, that's kind of one of the unique things about it.
You have really outdone yourself. This is really, really, really good stuff. Let's take a phone call and I'll eat some more. 800-348-2551, the number. We go to Robert in Niskayuna. Robert, you're on with Chef Rob Handel and Carol Clement.
Ray, this is an off-the-wall question, but I did a roast yesterday, and obviously the recipe called for some bay leaves. I have no idea what the concept is with bay leaves. They're very virtually tasteless and whatnot, but second thing to you is, do you remember the old White Horse down in Mount Kisco? You know, I know that area, and I know you're from down there.
Yeah, when was the White Horse there? Because I was only down there for about 5 years.
Oh, this goes back, you know, we're talking 30 years ago.
Oh, I was down there in the early 90s, so I do not remember. It's all a little hazy. I was in my late 20s, and things were very hazy back then.
Anyway, I'm warming up for St. Paddy's Day, drinking some Jameson as we speak.
God bless you.
But normally I would drink the Basil Hayden, which I know you like.
I like that, too.
Okay, well, sure, basil leaves.
As far as the bay leaves go, they do have flavor. Part of the problem is people buy a jar of them and then leave them in their cupboard for 10 years before they use them. So by then, they don't have very much flavor. The other issue is that often recipes don't call for quite enough bay leaves. You know, if you buy a fresh jar of bay leaves and you smell them, that aroma is the flavor that they have. And it's one of the spices. There's a few spices like this, you know, nutmeg, the bay leaves, juniper, where you're not looking to make the whole dish taste like bay. It enhances the dish without adding a distinct flavor of its own. So, you know, you're using it the way you might use pepper. You know, when you add pepper to a dish, you often aren't looking to...
So they're kind of flat.
Exactly. It just adds some complexity to the dish. So what I do is I often add a few extra bay leaves, more than what a recipe calls for, especially if I've made that recipe before and don't think that they've added anything. And you really want to be careful to buy fresh bay leaves. And, you know, if you don't use them often, don't buy a big jar. Buy a smaller jar so that they aren't getting old and dried out.
You can also grow a bay leaf tree in your house.
Really?
And have fresh leaves. Yes, I have one that's grown wonderfully. I've had it for about 20 years, and it's huge. I have all the fresh bay leaves I can use.
I mean, where is it normal to grow them outside?
Mediterranean.
So do you need to keep it very warm and moist in the...
It's in a sunroom in my house.
I'll be darned. Hey, Robert, good luck with the Jameson, buddy.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Our number is 800-348-2551. Talk St. Patrick's Day cooking today with Chef Rob Handel and Carol Clement of Heather Ridge Farm. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Kern Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York. holding a May symposium for life insurers on compliance in online and social media advertising. CurranCompliance.com. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, Pekarsky's.com. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass, European cuisine infused with flavors of the world, Northampton, Massachusetts, grab life by the knife and fork, VivaFreshPasta.com. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings, Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And personal wine cellar, Glenville, New York, offering an eclectic selection of red, white wines, and spirits. Wine tasting every Thursday and Friday, monthly scotch and bourbon tasting, home delivery services every weekend, 518-399-9463.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a Food Friday with Ray Graff and you at 800-348-2551. We talk St. Patrick's Day and Irish cooking with Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heatheridge Farm and Carol Clement, who owns and operates Heatheridge Farm. And let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Mandy, you're a fine girl. Hello.
Thank you. And maybe I am. I am looking for pickled tripe, which is food that my ancestors came from the British Isles and Nova Scotia and that general area, and we always had it when I was a kid. And I can find tripe now in stores. I live where there are a lot of Latino populations, but I haven't been able to find pickled tripe in decades.
Well,
I didn't know that was something that you cook, or rather that you grow.
Well, honestly, I'm not familiar with a recipe for pickled tripe. I've had tripe before, and I prepare it in a couple of different ways, but I'm not familiar of an Irish tradition with it, at least. And we don't part of the issue, we aren't able to get the tripe back from the beef that we send out, and that's just an issue with the slaughterhouse infrastructure and some of the regulations around that. What I would suggest is, if you can find a recipe online to kind of help give you some guidance as far as the seasonings go, but just a basic guideline for tripe, if you're able to get it in a grocery store or a Latino store, that's great. And I would just take it home, rinse it off really well, and slow cook it. Get a pot of water and add, maybe some onions, some carrots, some bay leaves, something to give it some flavor, things like that. And then just slow cook it in that water until it gets nice and tender. And then I would add some kind of, vinegar and seasonings and let it marinate in that for a little while. That's the way that you would make pickled herring or something like that.
And how long would you have to pickle it?
In this case, this is probably something where the pickling started as a preservation method, but now it's just you're using it for flavoring. Mm. I would say if you marinate it overnight or just a day or two, that would give it enough flavor. I haven't done it personally, but that would be how I would go about it if I wanted to try it.
Okay. There is one recipe on the internet. It's in a bunch of different places, but it's the same recipe. And I only got far enough to see that when you open the fresh tripe, it stinks really bad. And as soon as you start preparing it, it stinks much worse. And it sounded like it takes a long time.
Sounds appetizing, Mandy. Yeah, thank you very much.
I haven't found that to be the case. Usually when you get tripe from a store, it's been pretty well cleaned. There's a small amount of odor when you're cooking it, but... I haven't personally found it to be so offensive that you have to open all the windows in the house or anything like that.
That's good.
Well, thanks, Mandy.
Okay.
Have a great weekend. For those uninitiated, Rob, tell us what tripe is.
So tripe is part of the beef stomach. Hmm. So cows have a couple of different stomachs, and you can eat more than just one. But the one that most people are familiar with is called honeycomb tripe.
I see.
And it's called that because it looks like honeycomb. It's actually a kind of a pretty looking thing. So it's just this very pale kind of off-white color. And if you don't have a Latino store near you, it's commonly used in a dish called menudo. So that's why a lot of Latino stores have it. But most regular grocery stores are able to order it for you. You know, they often won't have it on the shelf, but if you ask them to, they can order some. And it looks like honeycomb. It's kind of pretty. Mm. And the way that I prepare it most commonly is there's a Romanian soup that utilizes it. And I always forget what the soup is called. But growing up at my family's resort, at one point there were some Romanian exchange students who were working there for the summer. And it's a soup that has, you know, you start with the stock and then you add the pieces of tripe. And then at the end, you stir some sour cream into it, and you serve it with pickled hot peppers.
Mm.
So it is a similar idea to the pickled tripe, where you're using some tartness to, you know, to bring some flavor to the dish.
I know tripe in cookbooks going back 100, 150 years, quite common here. Is it still common across the pond?
I really don't know. It's not a dish that I go after.
No? You don't see it in the local restaurant around
no.
here. So.
No.
All right, our number here is 800-348-2551. We talk St. Patrick's Day and other things with Chef Rob Handel and Carol Clement of Heather Ridge Farm. The potato pancakes are fantastic. So they're evocative of potato pancakes that I would get normally, but they have a different sort of a different feel to them.
Well, potato pancakes is common in a lot of different cultures, but
yeah.
this is how the Irish do it.
In most places, most cultures, when they make potato pancakes, they coarsely grate the potato.
Yeah.
So when you think of, you know, the German style ones or the latkes,
there's space in between them. And
exactly.
I think that's where you nailed it. There's a density.
Yeah,
to this.
These are really finely ground, actually. The way John's mom Tessie used to make them is that they would grate them on the fine side of a grater, and what we do now is we use a food processor actually to puree them. So, you know, they're much more dense and, you know, the texture is a lot different from that.
Really delicious. And somehow it managed all to stay warm. Did you just cook this?
Yeah, we just cooked it when we got here. We came a few minutes early.
Oh,
so
you cooked it in the kitchen upstairs?
Yeah.
And I'm eating it.
It smells great up there.
It does it really? there's a first for everything. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Chef Rob Handel is with the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollow. Carol Clement owns and operates the Heather Ridge Farm. So you said that you have things going on at the cafe, Rob, in celebration of the St. Patrick's Day season, if you will. What do you got going on?
Sure. So one of the things we just started doing over the winter is we have a traditional Irish music session on the second Sunday of every month.
Do you play?
I do. I play the tin whistle, the accordion, and the mandolin.
Really? Not at the same time, presumably.
Not at the same time, no. I'm usually cooking when we're doing it, but I try to sneak away to get a few tunes in. But we have some friends, Hilary Schrauf and Bernie Newman, who are both fiddle players, and they come and anchor the session, and then other musicians come to join in. And it's great. The way that these things typically work is everybody knows the same tunes, more or less. So we kind of go around in a circle and somebody picks a couple tunes to play. We all join in, and it's really a great time.
Did you learn to play the accordion at your folks' resort way back when?
Yeah. The way I learned, actually, was down in the bar, they had all these instruments kind of screwed to the wall as decoration. And I started learning the tin whistle and then said, oh, you know, I should... The accordion looks cool, so I got a screwdriver and I took the accordion off the wall and I started playing the accordion, and then I took, you know, the mandolin off the wall, and I've since upgraded to better instruments, but that's how I started.
Tin whistle doesn't require much, does it?
No, well, you know, it's...
Right? Is that about it?
Kind of. There's a little finesse involved. That's where the trick is. But.
All right. Our guest today is Chef Rob Handel, also joined today by Carol Clement. And the number is 800-348-2551. Samir in Iskiuna is on. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I recently got into Gaelic music, and I've been listening to this group called Lunasa. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but
Carol's
I'm wondering
nodding.
If that's
yeah.
the kind of music. I'm wondering if that's the kind of music you have coming to your restaurant.
Yes, it is. So Lunasa is one of the you know, more popular traditional Irish bands, and you know, that's the same kind of thing. They bring in some other styles that are evocative of other traditional music throughout the world. The music that we have at Heather Ridge is a little more geared towards the pure, what they call the pure drop Irish traditional. But it's very much the same kind of thing, yes.
Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rob Handel and Carol Clement with us. How's the coffee, by the way?
Not bad.
Colleen Excellent. O'Connell. She knows what she's doing. All right, over to Jean in Albany. Jean, you're on.
Hi. I just want to comment on the tripe.
Yeah.
I know where, you know, that the listener could get it, but she would have to call me and I'd get permission. You know, I don't want to give out someone's phone number.
No,
but,
you don't want to do that.
I had never even heard about tripe. But my dog, this was about my dog. My dog had cancer, and the gal where I would buy her food in Boston Spa, she told me about tripe. She was able to get some tripe in, and what tripe, and everybody had said, oh, God, it will just, you won't be able to stand the smell and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I didn't find it that horrible. I really didn't. And the dog absolutely loved it. And what it did for the dog, I don't know what it does for humans, it was building up her immune system and giving her a better appetite. Of course, she was, you know, eating raw food. But if they went online, it's a company out of Connecticut, Oma's Pride.
Okay.
But there is a woman, you know, locally. She gets, you know, a lot of their supplies in.
Oh, terrific.
If someone was interested. But I'll tell you something, the dog absolutely loved it. And it just,
well,
it was not that horrible.
I mean, that's setting the bar fairly low on a cooking show. If the dog, I mean, the dog likes a lot of stuff. But, Gene, I appreciate the call. For a moment, it sounded like we were on a Pets and Vets here. But thank you very much. Have a great weekend. And let's go to Helen in Oppenheim. Helen, you're on.
Hi, this is Helen from Oppenheim, and I just want to ask, which of the many cow stomachs is the honeycomb stomach?
It's the tripe show, boys and girls. Welcome.
I'm not sure. You know,
how many are there now in the cow?
I believe there's three, but you know, I try to focus less on the anatomy and more on what to do with it once I get it.
Well,
I'm not sure which stomach. I'm not sure exactly which stomach, but you know, if you ask for honeycomb tripe, that. That kind of covers.
Are you
all
a fan, Helen, of tripe?
No, I'm not a fan of tripe because I've never eaten it before. But my family does have roots in Nova Scotia.
Ah, well, Gene's dog loves
African,
it.
I'm an African American, and I love the culture. It's something that's latched onto me since I was 8 years old. I don't know why. So I guess I'm living, you know, both of my, you know, lives, ancestral and what have you,
in Nova Scotia.
My grandfather's a Mi'kmaq Indian from Nova Scotia.
Oh, cool. You know, I've been watching that Oak Island show, and it's have you seen that show, The Curse of Oak Island?
What's it called again?
Curse of Oak Island. It's about them digging for gold on Oak Island there.
Sounds like a Scooby-Doo episode.
Wow, I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, it's on History Channel.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Fantastic, well, yeah. I know that there was a show about the slaves who emigrated there and, you know, to get away from the slavery here. That was a show I watched. Yeah, that was great.
And one of the early inhabitants of Oak Island, we're way off. I mean, we're on tripe, we're on Nova Scotia. One of the early inhabitants of Nova Scotia was a black soldier from the British Army, and he left the British Army, and they gave him a big chunk of Oak Island. And he became fabulously wealthy, and so the rumor is that he found the treasure there back in the 1700s.
Maybe that's one of my ancestors. I'm going to have to look at that. What's the name of that show again? Because I have to see this.
Okay, it's called Curse of Oak Island, and we're going to...
Curse of Oak Island.
Yeah, it's really cool. Well, Helen, thanks a lot for the call, 800-348-2551. You see, Carol and Rob... Last time I was on vacation, and you were with Brian Shields, and it's a normal show. But when I host, anything goes, and it's tripe,
yeah,
it's
definite
Oak Island.
Correlation here.
Yeah, I mean, and Rob has been on with me before. He knows it just, you know, we go off the rails very quickly, and that's the way it rolls. Let's go to Harvey in Clarksburg, Mass. Harvey, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. Have you ever considered doing like corned beef in a sous vide? I just recently purchased a sous vide, and I've been using it for cooking lots of different things, and that's just something come to mind.
Yeah, you certainly could cook corned beef in a sous vide immersion circulator. So for anybody who's unfamiliar with that term, it describes a style of cooking where you have a machine that keeps a water bath at a very precise temperature. And then you put the food into a vacuum-sealed bag and you submerge it into this water bath, and that's how you cook the food. And the benefit to that is that you can't overcook it because you set the water bath to the temperature that you want the final product to be at. So traditionally, you know, sous vide is really great for things like steaks where you can overcook the steak very easily. Corned beef is something that gets cooked really low and slow for a long time. Corned beef is traditionally made out of brisket, which is something that's fairly tough unless you cook it a long time to break down all the collagen. So you can certainly set your sous vide machine to like 185, for instance, and keep it in there for a long time. The other thing you can do if you want to sous vide it for a very long time, you know, over the course of 2 or 3 days, is you can set it to a lower temperature. And the finished product won't be that same kind of fall-apart corned beef that people are used to, but it will get tender and it'll have kind of a unique texture to it. So if you're looking for the traditional corned beef that as you slice it, it's very, you know, fall-apart tender, I would recommend just cooking it the traditional way. If you want to experiment with something that has more of a texture like roast beef, you might try cooking it sous vide and set your machine to something like, you know, 140, for instance, or 130. If you look online, I'm sure there's some people who have done that. I haven't done it personally, but I know you could do it.
Well, yeah, I'm familiar with cooking briskets. They're smoking them in the South. I was just that I've never really had a corned beef until I moved to the Northeast, and that's kind of a new thing for me. So yeah, thank you.
Hey, you betcha. Harvey, thanks a lot for the call. When you serve corned beef, do you serve it with kind of a warm horseradish cream sauce?
Sometimes. Usually what I serve it with is we make two different styles of mustard at Heather Ridge. We do a spicy, smooth honey mustard, but then we also do a whole grain mustard where we leave the seeds completely whole. And that's my favorite. That's it's a really unique mustard because the texture, the seeds pop as you bite into them. And usually we serve it with that. And that's a style of mustard that people haven't had as frequently. And they're kind of surprised at how nice it is.
Is it still a popular dish, corned beef?
It's popular around St. Patrick's Day.
That's about it?
Well, the thing is cows only have a limited amount of brisket on them. So it's not
and
something.
How many stomachs again? No.
So it's not something that we push because there's not enough brisket on a cow to sustain serving corned beef every day of the week.
But we do a special corned beef for St. Patrick's Day, and we sell it. We brine it here on the farm, and we sell. We take orders for people to order. Do they want a 4-pound, a 6-pound, an 8-pound corned beef? They can order it from us. We brine it, and then they can pick it up and finish cooking it at home.
And what's the best way? Just boil it up?
Certainly, either boil it or really slow roast it in the oven in the liquid. Either way, it's in the liquid, in a savory liquid, and cook it long and slow so that it gets really tender and falls apart.
I never went for it. My mother made it every St. Patrick's Day, and corned beef again.
It's one of those things that people love it or hate it. You know, people who have these childhood memories, some of them are terrible memories of corned beef, and they never want to touch
it. Maybe she
and
wasn't good at it. Sorry, Mom. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We still have plenty of time for your questions about tripe or Nova Scotia. Whatever. It's Food Friday. It's almost done. Let's just take a break.
Support for WAMC comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Bread and Butter, located in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly, breadandbutteramherst.com. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts. Preparing weddings, showers, reunions, and more at the Curtis House with 3 B&B rooms available or at the recently renovated barn, Farm to Vase Florals. Information at gloriosaco.com. Umana Restaurant & Wine Bar, Albany, New York. Featuring international cuisine, Ethiopian specials, and eclectic wines, private parties, Tuesday through Sunday, the meeting place for all people, umanarestaurant.com. And Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, now in winter season, featuring farm-fresh produce and handmade goods every Saturday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. inside the Troy Atrium, troymarket.org.
Once again, how many stomachs does a cow have? Survey said 3. Number one answer. Well, welcome back to Food Friday. What fun we're having with Carol Clement of Heather Ridge Farm. She owns and operates the place. And Chef Rob Handel, who is in control of the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm. This one came in via email. We'll get right back to the phones. It's 800-348-2551. But this one came in via email from Robert. And subject heading, potato pancakes. Do you partially cook the spuds prior to making the pancakes? And how do you cook them? Pan fry, deep fry? That's from Robert in the town of Wright.
So we don't. Now, the boxty really varies greatly depending on different families. Some people do add some leftover mashed potatoes, so they'll incorporate mashed potatoes and raw potatoes.
Yeah.
For our version, we just grind up the potatoes raw. So, you know, we take a bunch of peeled potatoes, grind them up, add flour, egg, salt, and a little bit of white pepper. And then in a cast iron skillet, we melt some butter and just pan fry them in that butter in the skillet.
Nice. So, Carol, I'm guessing that you probably spent a little time at Irish bars over there.
Yes.
Okay. Do they have something? I've only found this once, and I may have had a couple, and I can't remember exactly where it was. But it was in it was a hard-boiled egg, and it was stuffed with sausage.
Well, that's also, you can get that, and it's coated with like a fried coating on the outside of it.
Yeah, maybe. Usually no, they're surrounded by sausage.
Well, that's it, Scotch egg.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Can
delicious.
You get those? Yeah,
we offer them sometimes in our cafe.
You make them?
Yeah, usually offer them in the spring, right before Easter. We'll do them. And we don't stuff them with sausage, but we take the hard-boiled egg and we wrap it in sausage and then bread it and fry it. So you can eat it either hot or cold, and you kind of cut it up and dip it in some spicy mustard. And
okay.
It's a...
Regardless of the topic, you're to bring those next time.
Okay? Oh, okay.
Right. Whatever okay. The topic is, that's something we must have.
They're addictive.
No, and good for you, too. Yes? Let's go to Ray in Red Hook. Ray, you're on.
How you doing? I don't like tripe, so I'm not going to talk about it. But
Thank you.
I like corned beef and cabbage.
All right, good.
Corned beef and cabbage. My mother's 90 years old now and never taught my wife how to make it. We finally, after 20-some-odd years, have given up except for the last year, and I hope we get to do it again. She cooked it in a slow cooker and put... the cabbage actually in with the corned beef. Is that something that you've tried, anybody?
Sacrilege? Is it okay?
No, that's the prescribed method. You know, the slow cooker is fine. Any way that you're heating the water and you're keeping the temperature below boiling, but, you know, at a steady temperature. So the slow cooker is fine. I wouldn't add the cabbage when you start the corned beef, because by the time it's done cooking, it will be falling apart.
Right?
Yeah, you know, usually, say, half an hour before the corned beef is done, you can add the cabbage in. Some people also slice up carrots and add that in. But you do get a lot of water. You get a lot of flavor out of that corned beef water, because some of the salt from the corned beef comes out of it, and the flavor from the beef and the spices that makes the cabbage taste a lot better at the end. And then, of course, the other thing that's absolutely crucial is after you take the cabbage and the carrots out, while they're still piping hot, you have to add a big knob of butter to them and toss them around in the butter so you get the butter also.
That's my question about when you serve cabbage, and some people don't cook it together, when you serve the cabbage, my family way back used to serve it with vinegar on it. Is that an Irish thing, or is that a... just my crazy family.
I haven't heard of it as an Irish thing. Have you, Carol?
No.
Sounds more like a German thing.
Yeah, it sounds like it's mimicking the red cabbage, the pickled red cabbage or sauerkraut or something like that.
All right.
I mean, that's how we used to serve it, and I now make my own vinegar, so it's like I want to.
Well, it certainly sounds like it would be tasty, whether it's traditionally Irish or not.
Tradition. You know, you like it. Go for it.
It's your tradition now.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Before we get back to the phones, this breaking email came in from Kathy, who says, enough about beef. How about the cabbage? My brother and I love it. 18 other people in the house hate it. 20 people in the house, Kathy? Well, we've talked about cabbage, right?
He needs a big piece of corned beef.
It sounds like you're inviting the wrong people to your St. Patrick's Day dinner.
They don't like the cabbage. Well, all the more for you, though. How would you prepare cabbage, Carol?
I like it so it's still a little crispy. As my corned beef is finished simmering, real slow simmer in the pot, I'll add the corned beef on top of it. So it's really just kind of steaming through.
Mm.
Take it out, dry it off. Then splash it with a little bit of the strained liquid from the corned beef.
And your husband of Irish heritage is okay with that?
He is. I think in his family, they sometimes cook the cabbage totally separate.
Oh, interesting.
So it didn't have the flavoring, mixed it with a little butter, and then combined it on the plate.
And there we go. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Jerry in Lenox is on. Jerry, you're on.
How you doing? I'm going to go back to the cow stomach again. I believe a cow has four stomachs.
Okay.
And the honeycomb stomach is the third stomach.
Oh, great.
For anyone who cares.
All okay, right. Good no, to I know. Care.
All righty.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it very much. Do they number them? Are they when you open the cow up, are they numbered? 1, 2, 3, 4?
Sure.
Well, hang in there, Rob. Only 12 minutes to go. 800-348-2551. Ed in Clifton Park. Ed.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if your guest could suggest an alternative dinner option than corned beef and cabbage that is traditionally Irish.
I'm with you, man.
Well, I'm so glad you asked because that was something I really wanted to talk about today.
Great.
So, you know, the corned beef isn't as traditional in Ireland as it is here in America.
Interesting.
The traditional dinner that you would make if you were in Ireland would be what they call bacon, which, like the rasher on the plate, it's not what we would associate as bacon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pork loin that you brine in the same fashion that you would brine the corned beef. So you add salt. Some people would add nitrates. You can certainly do it without the nitrates if you wanted. Some of the same spices. And you would brine the pork loin in that for anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks, and then you would cook it the same way that you cook corned beef. You would put it in a pot and kind of slow cook it for hours, and then you would serve that with boiled potatoes and cabbage and that kind of thing. And I did that last year at my St. Patrick's Day dinner, and everybody was kind of glad to have an alternative option. And it's really tasty. It's a really great way to prepare the pork. And then you could serve that with mustard, or you might make a parsley sauce, which is basically a bechamel, a white cream sauce that you add some chopped parsley to, and that's kind of nice with the salty pork.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. And by the way, while Ed was on, I tried the rasher finally, and it's amazing. So that is just very thick. It's not real bacon in our sense.
No, not at all. It's from the pork loin, where the bacon is from the belly.
So delicious. And how do you season that?
That's very simply seasoned with salt, a little bit of cure, which gives it some flavor and the color, and a small amount of sugar in the brine. And it's just brined in that and then sliced and fried.
I could definitely have that for my St. Patty's.
That would be the more common dish in
really?
Ireland. Yes.
Okay.
As I heard a guy on the radio one day say, I'm just savage for bacon and cabbage.
Done. I wouldn't say it that way, but I agree with the sentiment. Gary in Munson, Mass. Gary, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, my wife has invented the vegetarian corned beef.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She gets home at 5:30. Promptly starts cooking a corned beef and serves it at 6, and the only thing you can eat are the damn vegetables.
Hey, ba-dum-bum. You've been waiting 10 minutes for that joke there, Gary. Way to go, man.
It's not a joke. It's a sad, sad story.
Way to go.
34 years of this sad story.
Oh, well, one thing that you might suggest to your wife is that you can easily pre-cook the corned beef. It's a dish that's kind of like a stew where it reheats really nice. So, you know, if you have the day off a few days before St. Patrick's Day or even the night before, you can cook it and then just reheat it that night and it'll be nice and tender and have a great flavor still.
Or start the corned beef in the morning in the crock pot.
Or exactly, that's a great use for the crock
pot. Gary
pot.
Waited like 12 minutes, but he delivered it perfectly.
Well,
great
timing. I was really glad because I was kind of nervous about the vegetarian corned beef. You know, we're a meat and poultry farm. We kind of believe in beef in our corned beef.
I have a feeling that that's not the first time he's told that joke. It probably comes up around this time every year, but well played,
perfect.
Gary.
Thank you.
Bonus points. Marion in Albany. Marion, you're on.
Hi, I know you haven't talked about baking very much, but I was interested in traditional Irish soda bread. I see so many different recipes for it, some that it's more of a yeast bread, some that it's more like a biscuit. What's the real traditional?
Irish soda bread.
Well, there are two kinds of soda bread. There's the white soda bread that we're familiar with. Sometimes it has bits of currants in it, and it's usually done with a baking powder and buttermilk, some kind of sour milk.
All soda bread should be
soda.
With
baking
soda,
exactly. Excuse me. Soda, that's why it's called soda bread. We also like the traditional brown bread, which is done with a coarser, softer flour and comes more like a whole wheat bread, which has a piece of right there.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
So the reason there are so many different versions is because, you know, every family made it a little bit differently.
Oh.
And a lot of the women that I know who make soda bread who came here from Ireland in the 40s and 50s, and they don't measure anything. They take a couple of handfuls of flour and, you know, they know how much fits in their hand to make the bread come out right. So every family did it differently. None of them should be yeast risen, because if they're yeast risen, then they're not really a soda bread.
Okay, so it doesn't have yeast. Okay.
Yeah, and if you'd like to try making the brown bread, which I really recommend.
I just had a piece. It's delicious.
It's great. A lot of people in America aren't familiar with it. It does require kind of a special flour. It requires what they call a soft white flour, and most of the whole wheat flour that you find is a hard wheat flour. But if you go to King Arthur, they have
they
make what they call an Irish style flour that's specifically for that.
And that brown bread is actually more the everyday bread of Ireland. The white soda bread would be used for fancy occasions.
I didn't know that.
Why does this have a sort of a sweetness to it, and almost there's like a citrus, almost an edge of citrus to this?
There is a small amount of sweetener in the brown bread, but a lot of the sweetness actually comes from the sweetness inherent in the wheat.
Mm.
So the wheat germ has a lot of natural sweetness to it. So that's really what you're picking up on.
I love this bread. And I'm going to find some butter as soon as we're done. Oh,
there's
butter
nice,
right there. Oh.
We have some nice Kerrygold butter.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we'll have to take another call here while I butter my bread. Pat in Saratoga Springs. Pat, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to comment on the gentleman who called in before asking about vinegar.
Yeah.
Served with the corned beef and cabbage. Well, my mother's family, 100% Irish, and it was a sacrilege not to have vinegar on the table.
Hmm.
So, for what it is worth. But I do have a quick question for you, and this is an argument that I have going with my husband. His mother's family is also Irish. Lamb stew, traditional lamb stew, with peas or without?
Aha!
Well, you know, for a very small country, you know, if you ask 100 Irishmen how to do something, you'll get 100 different answers. You know,
you're an argumentative crowd, I'll tell you.
Oh, they sure are.
What would you do?
I would put peas in my lamb stew if peas were in season, and if they weren't, I would not.
Ooh, easy enough.
Yeah.
All right, Pat, thank you very much. Well, the picture I found of bangers and mash, which I put on the website, had peas on it, I think. Peas, is that common? You put the peas right on the mashed potatoes?
It's a vegetable that is grown in Ireland, so in season they would use it, yes.
My kids would never eat.
Yeah.
No, I made them eat peas last night, oddly enough. It's a very rare, it's like an eclipse. It only happens once in a while. Victoria in Amherst. Victoria, you're on.
Hi there. I wanted to just ask about cooking potatoes in corned beef, cabbage, and carrots. Do you guys do that? Because that's what I grew up with. My kids love it, but it didn't come up, so I just wondered about it.
Potatoes are usually used with it. You can either cook it in the same water, don't peel them, or just cut a couple of slashes in them so that they absorb some of the flavor. In Ireland, they talk about two different kinds of potatoes, the floury potatoes and the waxy potatoes. The floury ones can burst if you cook them hard in boiling water. So you want to cook them very, very gently or cook them separately from your corned beef. But potatoes definitely go with the dish.
And in America, if you're looking to find...
Do you use red potatoes?
Red potatoes would be considered a waxy potato. So if you're looking to differentiate between the two, the russet baking potatoes, those are floury potatoes. Something like Yukon Gold or the red potatoes or even the white cooking potatoes, those are waxy. And personally, I prefer using the waxy potatoes if I'm going to boil potatoes and serve them like that. If you're making mashed potatoes or, you know, a baked potato, the floury ones are better. But that's a personal preference.
All right, Victoria, thanks a lot for that. Quickly over to Irene, who's in South Lee, who's been waiting a while. Irene, we have about a minute for you.
Well, one quick question.
Okay.
Is there a traditional dessert for the corned beef and cabbage St. Patrick's meal?
Chocolate cake? No.
No. That's become traditional among some American Irish, is, you know, things with chocolate and Baileys and that kind of thing. But one really nice, simple, traditional dessert is what's called a fool. And that's where you make some lightly sweetened whipped cream, and then you fold some cooked fruit into it. Mm. So just some frozen berries, and you cook them with a little bit of sugar, and then fold that into the whipped cream. And it's just a very light, kind of satisfying dessert after you eat this heavy corned beef meal.
Well, there you go. So we've talked about tripe and fools today. It's like your standard broadcast day, actually. All right. So, Carol Clement, what's coming up soon at Heather Ridge?
We have a month full of Irish things. We've got our Irish breakfast every weekend at the brunch and lunch menu. We've got our supper club coming up. We have our Grange dinner coming up. We have live music on the 12th.
All right. And Rob, you're going to presumably play the tin whistle at some point?
Yeah, of course.
Hey, man, well, good luck with the Bee's Knees Cafe. I know we'll see you again, and we'll Lord knows where we'll go with the show, but we'll do something. And hope you both have a great St. Patrick's Day. Nice to have you both here. And the link to the Heather Ridge Farm is...
heather-ridge-farm.com.
Okay, and it's also on our Vox Pop page. So if you go to that Vox Pop for Food Friday today, you'll find a link there. Support comes from Field Goods, working to help people change the way they eat and support sustainable communities. Local produce from the Hudson Valley, delivered weekly year-round to workplace and community locations, field-goods.com. Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York, featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients, facebook.com/roundhousebakerycafe. And Big Y, for more than 80 years, family-owned and operated market with 5 locations in the Berkshires with locally grown produce, fresh meat, and seafood, bigy.com. Thanks again to Rob Handel and Carol Clement of Heather Ridge Farm for being with us today. Thanks to you for listening and the great calls, mainly about tripe. Thanks to Zach Malloy, not dealing any tripe at the controls today. Barb King took your calls. Our producer, who's frankly, he's full of tripe most of the time, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. On Monday at 2, it's Medical Monday. Right now, stand by for news.